Welcome back as we continue our journey on the book Salvation is from the Jews by author Roy Shulman, and we're joined here again with Roy. Tonight, as we go through the ideological foundations of Nazism, Roy, Nazism is a fundamental theme in this book. In last episodes, we spoke about theologically, why is Nazism such a fundamental theme?
It is, in some sense, a central theme in the book. I'm not sure I'd use the word fundamental, but it plays a very prominent role in the book for a number of reasons. One is, the subtitle of the book is The Role of Judaism in Salvation History from Abraham to the Second Coming. And the emergence of Nazism, it's kind of directly taking aim at the Jewish people and directly taking aim at trying to exterminate the Jewish people, I think actually sheds a lot of light on the role of Judaism and salvation history, especially with respect to the Second Coming, because a basic underlying premise that I have is, first of all, that the impulse behind Nazism, the impulse that led to the Holocaust and the attempt to exterminate the Jews, was a direct expression of the diabolical will, was a direct expression of Satan's will. And I will justify that statement in the course of this show and perhaps in the following show. That it's important to make that point for a number of reasons. One is, in a kind of a sidelight important reason, is that the church is being accused of somehow being complicit in the Holocaust, or that somehow the Holocaust was an expression of misguided Christianity. And in fact, if you look at the evidence, you see that nothing could be further from the truth, that it flowed from the spirit that is most directly opposed to Christianity, that is the satanic spirit, and that it actually had a plan for eliminating Christianity too, although eliminating the Jews and Judaism was the first step. But another reason it's important to examine it in order to shed light on the role of Judaism in salvation is basically, why would the devil be so intent on exterminating the Jewish people if they no longer had a role to play in salvation history? So I do think that indirectly it sheds a lot of light on the continuing role of the Jews during this period between the First and Second Coming, and in particular the role of the Jews in the Second Coming. Because I think that if you look at the evidence and if you look at the history, one can almost conclude that the attempt to exterminate the Jews was related to an attempt to forestall or prevent the Second Coming.
Now, the Holocaust differed from previous persecutions of the Jews, and you explained some of that in the book. Could you go through some of that?
Sure. The previous persecutions of the Jews in the Christian world, in Christendom essentially, which of course Europe was until very recently, were basically aimed at one of two things. They were either aimed at the conversion of the Jews. I mean, the Jews saw them as persecution, but the Christians behind them saw them actually as an act of charity, because they were trying to do everything to bring the Jews to the truth of Christianity and to bring them to conversion, in part because Catholic theological teaching developed since then, and in those days the thinking in the church was that there was no salvation if a non-Christian died without conversion. There was no possibility of salvation for them. Now, we know more now than that. That teaching has been much further elaborated and has become clear in a number of documents. Certainly, there were documents in Vatican II, Dominus Iesus, and so forth, that make clear that it's not that clear-cut. It's not that simple. But most Christians in the Middle Ages thought that way. So they were thinking that nothing's worse than ending up in hell forever. So even if they were a little bit heavy-handed, to say the least, in, for instance, they used to, in various places in Europe, including in the Papal States at times, force the Jews to attend Sunday afternoon sermons aimed at their conversion, essentially apologetics, and the Jews would be compelled by law to be present in the church and have a preacher explain to them why Jesus was the Messiah and so forth. Now, the Jews saw this as persecution. In a sense, it was. But the impulse behind it was not exterminating the Jews or punishing the Jews. It was actually, the impulse behind it was a misguided charity to kind of improve the lot of the Jews. So that was one impulse behind the earlier persecution of the Jews. And another impulse was to protect Christian society from the influence of the Jews. That the thinking in those days was that they were trying to essentially perfect society by putting it under the reign of Christ in this world and have, basically the Christian inspiration, the Christian ethics, the Christian morality run society. And what you do with the Jews, because they're not in the state of grace sacramentally, they don't buy into all of that. How do you get the kind of coherence and uniformity in the social fabric if you have this element which does not conform? I'm not justifying this. I still think this is wrong, but it's very different from saying we've got to exterminate all of you because your blood is so polluted, you know, that it's an offense to the rest of the world.
Which was the motivation with Holocaust. Before we go to the Holocaust, you bring out the Inquisition, and I thought that was very interesting because a lot of times we receive today misinformation on the Inquisition, and you brought out again that they were not persecuting the Jews. They were. Could you explain that?
Sure. It's a kind of a complex and subtle issue, and I'm going to be simplistic in the interest of time, but I don't want to be misinterpreted as that I'm defending the actions, you know, in a broad brushed way of the Inquisition. But the situation was the following, which was, I think it was about 1492, 1493, that the government of Spain, which was a very Catholic king and queen, I think King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, issued an edict expelling the Jews from Spain for the reason that I kind of described, that they wanted a completely Christian society, and the Jews were kind of a sore thumb sticking out. So they said all the Jews in Spain had to leave. Now, the Jews didn't have any place to go. They didn't have any place that was ready to take them in. So, and not to mention that just uprooting and leaving the country where you and, you know, eight generations earlier, you know, for eight generations you lived there and so forth was very difficult and painful. So a large number of Jews pretended to become Catholic so that they could stay in Spain. But they went through a pro forma entry into the church and baptism. But they held to their Jewish practices in secret. They held to their Jewish beliefs. They didn't buy into Christianity. They certainly didn't buy into the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and so forth. So they were actually sacrilegious Catholics. They were called Muranos. These Jews who were pretending to be Catholic were known as Muranos. And they were actually committing sacrilege every time they received communion. And so the Inquisition was set up in order to eliminate heresy within the church and unmask heretics within the church. It's the original target of the Inquisition was actually the Albigensians, the Cathars, which is another heresy that began in the south of France and actually was a New Age heresy. But unfortunately, this show isn't about that. But that would be an interesting.
We'll have
topic.
To have you back.
But later in time, the focus of the Inquisition, especially in Spain, was against these crypto-Jews or these secret Jews who were pretending to be Catholic. The Inquisition never asserted any authority at all over Jews who said they were Jews and never claimed to be Catholic. If the Inquisition called in a Jew, not that this could have happened, and that Jew simply said, you know, what am I doing here? I'm not a Catholic. I was never a Catholic. All I wanted to do was be a good Jew. You have no authority over me. They would totally agree. I mean, the Inquisition never asserted any authority at all over anybody who did not claim to be Catholic. Unfortunately, there were a large number of Jews who were claiming to be Catholic, and some of them were not really Catholic. And so the Inquisition did call in Jews, Jewish Catholic converts, who were accused of being non-believers, really, and secretly still Jews, and did use extremely heavy-handed and inappropriate methods to, quote, determine the truth.
And I appreciate you sharing that. And I know we stepped off for just a second there, as I asked you to, but I found that very interesting in the book. Now to get back to where you were with the Holocaust was different. The Holocaust looked at eliminating
it was a completely different gesture, so to speak. It had nothing to do with converting the Jews. It had nothing to do with enforcing Christian society by ensuring the absence of the Jews. It was about the extermination, the racial extermination of Jewish blood. And it was so extremely pointed in that direction that it didn't even matter if a Jew was a Catholic, if a Jew was a convert. It didn't even matter if your grandparents had been Jewish and had converted to the Catholic Church. Your parents had been born and raised believing Catholics. You were born and raised believing Catholic. All that mattered was the bloodline, you know, and that was it. So it was based on basically almost an occult view of race that basically was thinking in terms of eugenics is the right word. Now, eugenics just means selective breeding when applied to human beings. So just like, you know, if you want a golden retriever or something with, I don't know what you want on them, big ears or whatever, you do selective breeding. Or a German shepherd with a very nice personality, you do selective breeding and, you know, choose as parents the puppies with the best personality. It's that selective breeding applied to the human race.
So when we talk today about designer genes and creating, manipulating the genes so that we could create better children or blue-eyed, blonde-haired, this is still the same eugenics.
That would also probably be eugenics, but not through selective breeding. I mean, it would be an attempt to improve the gene pool, but not through selective breeding. Now, selective breeding with dogs isn't too bad because you choose the ones you want to and allow them access to members of the opposite sex, so to speak, to procreate. But the problem with human beings is if you try to do selective breeding, how do you keep them from breeding if you don't want them to breed? And there are really only two ways. There are three ways, I guess. One is exterminate them. Another is forcibly segregate them so they don't have access to the opposite sex. And the third is forced sterilization. And all three of those methods were endorsed and used by the Third Reich, and all three of those methods were endorsed and wanted to be used by Margaret Sanger and her birth control league.
Now, there's a name we've heard before.
That's right. So this is kind of a backdoor way of getting into that connection. But it is extremely illuminating, especially when we look at our culture today and the role of Planned Parenthood and the birth control movement run amok, to see that in its roots it was totally a handmaiden of the Third Reich, and that there was a complete congruence between the motives and the methodologies of the Third Reich and those proposed by Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger, just to back up, is the founder of Planned Parenthood. She was, by the way, a fallen away Catholic.
And she was very anti-Catholic.
She was very anti-Catholic.
Writings and speakings.
That's right, very opposed to the church. And she set up the Birth Control League in the first part of the 20th century to promote birth control, motivated by extremely racist motivations, which you wrote about.
So it wasn't about a woman's right to choose and a woman's rights. This was more.
It was oriented towards limiting the procreation of what she called the inferior races, which certainly included the non-white races, but also actually included Catholics. And she talked about Italian immigrants and being even lower on the evolutionary scale than non-white races, which is pretty, I mean, the whole concept is bizarre anyway you look at it. And there was a continual interchange between expertise and experts between Margaret Sanger's Birth Control League, which was the original name of Planned Parenthood, and the Third Reich. For instance, a Margaret Sanger Birth Control League board member named Harry Lothrop wrote a book in 1920. I have the first name wrong, but anyway, his last name was Lothrop. Wrote a book in 1920 called The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. And does that sound racist or what? The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy, meaning that white world supremacy was the desired state.
Right.
And the increase in non-white population was a threat to it. He was a Margaret Sanger board member, because obviously this was a reflection of her philosophy. And that book that he had written became the foundational text in the German school system for eugenics under Hitler, so much so that Goebbels complained to Hitler that it was inappropriate that a foreigner's text should be used as the foundation of the German eugenics education.
And he wasn't the only Margaret Sanger connection that you point out in the book.
No,
that influenced the Third Reich.
There was, for instance, a frequent contributor to Margaret Sanger's Birth Control Review was Dr. Ernst Rudin, who was the head of the primary German Eugenics Institute under Hitler. Now, let me say what the German Eugenics Institute under Hitler did. Hitler was named Chancellor January 30th, 1933. Within a couple of months, he set up the expert committee on questions of population and racial policy to enforce eugenics. They first passed a law calling for the compulsory sterilization of, by their definition, carriers of hereditary diseases, which is defined as including epilepsy, alcoholism, and simple-mindedness, under which probably at least 400,000 people were forcibly sterilized so that they could not pass on their inferiority to the next generation. He later set up, it was called the T4 group, by their definition, euthanize disabled children. At birth, every doctor and midwife had to check off one of two boxes whether the child should be allowed to live or not, under which program over a quarter million children were killed at birth. And that was the work of the Eugenics Institute. That was Margaret Sanger's eugenics. And as a matter of fact, let me read a quote from Margaret Sanger, in case anyone might think I'm coming down too hard on her. By the way, that was Lothrop's daughter, was the author of The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. This is the words of Margaret Sanger, an article that she wrote in her Birth Control Review in 1932. And now Hitler came to power in 1933, okay? So this is like right flowing into the launch of the Third Reich. These are some of her programs in something she called her plan for peace, her plan for world peace, okay? Point one, to apply a stern and rigid policy of sterilization and segregation to that grade of population whose progeny is tainted or whose inheritance is such that objectionable traits may be transmitted to offspring. Okay, to apply a stern and rigid policy of sterilization and segregation. Stern and rigid policy means nothing voluntary about it, right? I mean, enforced by the government, enforced by the state, of sterilization and segregation, meaning either they're to be forcibly sterilized or they're to be forcibly segregated from the rest of the population.
Forcibly segregated from the population.
Let me go on to the next point, because she elaborates in case it might be ambiguous. To give certain genetically undesirable groups in our population their choice of segregation or sterilization. To apportion farmlands and homesteads for these segregated persons, where they would be taught to work under competent instructors for the period of their entire lives. In other words, concentration camps. Then the conclusion of this, with 5 million mental and moral degenerates segregated, we could then turn our attention to the basic needs for international peace. So this was a precondition for peace in the world. Now, it's interesting today to think about this, because actually we're seeing the same thing, coming from our government in slightly veiled form, because they're actually saying, we need abortion, we need population limitation, and then we'll turn our attention to world peace, right? They're making that connection.
Right.
Between tension in the world, strife in the world, a shortage of resources. What we have to do is get control of the population. We have to get abortion freely available in the third world and so forth, or else people will still be fighting people.
And you've pointed out that Margaret Sanger is somewhat of a hero in this country, and you mentioned that she even has...
They have a postage stamp.
A postage stamp. I couldn't believe that. And just to be fair, in case somebody says, well, those were people who were on her board, but that was not Margaret Sanger, you point out here... And I pulled the page up while you were speaking. Margaret Sanger herself wrote several articles on eugenics. And that's on page 188.
Yeah, several is an understatement. Well, she wrote that plan for peace, okay? That was her own words.
Plan for peace.
She wrote. But she was all about eugenics. And she was she was very explicit, although not on a public forum, but in her own circle, very explicit about the racism behind her her eugenics, and that in fact it was the non-white races and the essentially the Catholic immigrants who she saw as bringing down the gene pool. And this is exactly the same philosophy, the same methodology, which was actually enforced by Hitler, although his primary, certainly initial target, was the Jews, because of what he saw as the racial taint in their blood. And I probably want to spend most of the next show talking about where that attitude that he had came from about the racial taint in the Jewish blood and how intimately linked that was to the occultism, which also underlay the Third Reich. But I'll just leave that in as a
teaser. And maybe just a brief overview of what Hitler was trying to create with this eugenics. Why he was a super race? Was it?
Well, he okay. I want to give it more time.
I like to put a teaser out there.
But as a teaser, Hitler's first springboard to public prominence was an occult society in Munich called the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E. Thule was the Germanic version of the Atlantis myth. Thule was supposedly a continent in the Atlantic Ocean that sank under the waves. While it still existed, the people there had superpowers. They were superhuman. They could travel through the air. They had mental telepathy and so forth. When the continent sank, those people fled to the mainland, to Europe, and they intermingled, interbred with inferior races, and in so doing, lost their superpowers. If the purity of their bloodlines could be restored through selective breeding, through eugenics, they would regain their superpowers. And that was the origin of the Nazi Superman myth, which was behind the first of all, the preference of blonde-haired, blue-eyed Germans. I think you might have qualified, by the way, Rick, the attempt to exterminate, those with this polluted blood that was dragging down the super race. And first and foremost, and the worst offender among these were the Jews, for other reasons related to occultism, which I'll talk about next time. So we see that everything you see is the worst image of the Third Reich, this racial superiority, this Superman myth, this selective breeding to produce the Nazi Superman and exterminate everyone else competing for the resources, all came directly from the Thule myth, all came directly from occultism and what New Age, because the Atlantis myth is, you know, high profile in the New Age today.
Exactly, and that's where Hitler was not just some lone, power-hungry kook who came up out of nowhere, and you point that out so beautifully, and you trace the roots. That's why I wanted you to give a little teaser here, so that then on the next show we can go through where the occultism played a role, a huge role, in what Hitler did, and with the Holocaust and the extermination of so many Jews. And so thank you for joining us, and I hope you're reading along with us as we get into this chapter. Really need you to be reading this chapter. And again, this is chapter 6, because as we get into the occultism, there's signs of the occultism that are prevalent with whenever the devil is present. And some of that would be a little sensitive to address here in a program such as this. So it would help if you were able to read chapter 6. You would get more out of this in the next week, and we would not have to address it here. So thank you for joining us. God bless.